9. Ideological transparency. The candidate is working from a clear theoretical and political prior and has written a dissertation that reads as advocacy for that prior. The committee includes one or more members who hold opposite priors and read the dissertation as ideology dressed as scholarship. The remedy is not to pretend you have no priors. It is to write the dissertation in a way that the positive empirical claims are clearly separable from the normative implications, and to demonstrate at the defense that the empirical claims would survive replacement of the analyst by a researcher with different priors. We cover this in chapters 10 and 17. Oral defense collapse. The candidate has, in fact, done the substantive work. The dissertation is methodologically clean, theoretically literate, evidentiarily strong, well-cited, modestly claimed. But on the day, the candidate cannot perform the oral defense. The answers come out badly. The cadence is wrong. The candidate's voice goes high and fast under pressure. The candidate overtalks every question and dilutes his own answers. The candidate is sleep-deprived or caffeinated or both. The committee, watching this, begins to doubt that the candidate did the work. Chapters 11, 13, and 18 are devoted to the oral half of the defense. Of these 7 failure modes, 6 are pre-defense problems with manuscript or preparation, and 1 is an in-room problem with performance. Most candidates overinvest in the 7th and underinvest in the first 6. They believe, sometimes correctly, that they have done the substantive work, and they believe, almost always incorrectly, that the in-room performance is what stands between them and the degree. So they rehearse their 20-minute opening, they buy a new shirt, they read books on public speaking, and they walk in confident in their delivery and unprepared for the hostile reading. The hostile reading is not principally a delivery problem. The hostile reading is a manuscript problem and a preparation problem, and the in-room performance is the moment at which those underlying problems become visible. Performance coaching can mitigate at the margin. It cannot save a manuscript that has not been hardened against hostile reading. There is a second-order problem here that is worth naming. Many candidates have an instinct, when they first encounter the framing of hostile reading, to bristle. They believe, sometimes accurately, that their committee members are colleagues, mentors, even friends, and they resist the language of adversarial reading because it feels untrue to the actual social texture of their relationship with the committee. I have some sympathy for this resistance, but I think it is a serious tactical error. The same committee member who is your warm and supportive mentor in the corridor is, when seated in the defense room, performing a different institutional role. He is reading on behalf of the discipline, not on behalf of you. The defense is an institutional event in which his job is to certify on the discipline's behalf that you are competent to be admitted to the discipline as a peer. That certification has value precisely because it is not given lightly, which means the certifier has to be, in some functional sense, hostile, at least temporarily, at least enrolled to the candidate. The friend who certifies you without testing you has not certified you at all. The candidate who understands this is in a much better position than the candidate who does not. The candidate who understands this can prepare the dissertation and the defense to withstand the hostile reading without taking the hostile reading personally. He can hear the hostile question as a request for a more rigorous demonstration rather than as an attack. He can produce a clean answer rather than a defensive one. He does not waste cognitive resources on the management of his own offended feelings during the most cognitively demanding 2 hours of his academic career to date. He shows up ready to do the work the room requires. I want to add a public choice gloss to this because public choice is the analytical framework I find most useful for understanding how committees actually behave. The committee is not a standing collective so much as a set of normally independent scholars who go about their own work and convene only when the chair judges the dissertation ready and calls the defense. Each member brings his own utility function, and the public choice incentives that move him operate mostly in his own realm, his career advancement, his professional moves, his standing among peers. The chair has incentives to see the candidate pass. The chair has invested years in the candidate, and the chair's reputation is tied to the candidate's quality. The external examiner often has incentives to be visibly rigorous, because the external examiner's institutional role is precisely to provide an outside check on the local department's standards. The internal members have a more complicated calculus involving their relationship with the chair, their assessment of the dissertation, their intellectual interest in the subject, and their political position in the department. None of these incentives are bad. None of them are corrupt. They are simply